It has been a long week, right, everybody here? Long week?
Long.
Aren't they all? This week we've talked about Savannah's high crime rate, the science of the seven deadly sins, loud restaurants, but now it's time to sit back, relax, and celebrate Good Friday. Let's head into the break room.
The GOP race for president getting personal. Donald Trump and Senator Ted Cruz now in the middle of a wife war.
A handful of students, they used terms like that they were traumatized and that they felt this was a violent action against them. Just seeing a bunch of pro-Trump chalk writings throughout the campus.
Disney and Marvel aren't happy with the state of Georgia over the possible passage of a religious liberty bill. As such, Disney and Marvel are threatening to not shoot any more films in Georgia.
It is a very special Savannah edition of The Break Room this morning. Here with me today, organic farmer Matthew Rayford of Brunswick. Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning. How are you?
From Savannah's own 24... Yeah, I'm doing well. Thank you. Own 24E Furniture and Interior Design Store. We have Roel Joyner.
Yes, ma'am.
Amy Condon of Savannah Magazine back with us.
Hi.
Hello.
Good to be back.
And newcomer, a rookie in The Break Room. Everyone go nice. Clinton Edminster, Executive Director of ArtRise. Savannah.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Is there anybody in the room who's from Macon? Yeah, well, Cindy Hill, our own GPB zone, Cindy Hill is.
She a figment of our imagination?
I don't know if she exists or not. Macon is the hometown, obviously, of a number of musical legends. Otis Redding, Allman Brothers were there. The city even scored an unforgettable, inexplicable mention on The Simpsons back in the mid-1990s.
I've always wanted to see Macon, Georgia.
But a satirical newspaper called the, you guys forgot about that, didn't you? A satirical newspaper called the Nevada County Scooper recently published an article that suggests Macon is actually an elaborate hoax and the city doesn't really exist. It looks like poor Macon is not here to stand up for itself. But look, here's the thing. Why do people pick on Macon?
I've always said that Savannah would be Macon without SCAD.
But that sounds like more of an insult.
Yeah, you kind of do. Like you're throwing some shade.
I know.
My sister's from Macon, and I love Macon, so no shade at all.
But why do people keep picking on Macon? I mean, help me out here. I'm not from Georgia. Why do people pick on Macon?
I've always found, I was just up there quite recently for a workshop on the arts, and maybe one side of it is that it's in some ways almost too good to be true. I think kind of like their investment in the arts recently and kind of how they've taken on revitalization through the arts is something we could all really stand to pay a lot more attention to. And so maybe we just don't want to look at our own evil vices in our own cities and kind
look
of.
Look at that positivity from that.
We pick on Macon because they're just doing so good.
Right. And Amy, why? Matthew, why? Why poor Macon?
I don't know. I think it's because it's so close to Atlanta. It's like right on that. It's right on the out of Atlanta. Like when you talk about Atlanta proper, it's, you know, 13 square miles or whatever that might happen to be. And then you got 23 counties. And then Macon almost drops off. Like it just missed it by like 3 miles or something crazy like that. So I think that that's part of it too, because Atlanta sucked up everything around it. So it seems like by now it would have sucked up Macon, you know?
Yeah, I think what happens is most people don't have a relationship to Macon, and so they're passing through. So it's like two exits looking for a city kind of thing. They're on their way somewhere else, and so they don't have a relationship to it or the people to it. So it's easy to malign.
We got a tweet from somebody named Cody Lee Rhodes who says, Macon isn't real. I mean, it would explain why my memories of Macon are suddenly hazy. you can send us your responses. Someone's got to stand up for Macon.
Does anybody know why... Macon is where it's at.
Oh, okay. So my producers tell me that on Sex and the City, the HBO show, they actually claimed that Macon was the birthplace of the scrunchie, the hair scrunchie.
Oh, wow.
Thank you from my 1980s self.
And then it's also the location, if you're a Walking Dead fan, of Terminus in The Walking Dead. It was not filmed there, but that's supposed to be in Macon.
Yeah.
So come on, somebody.
So it has important cultural references.
We could give Macon a participation trophy.
Come on, someone speak up for Macon. It's
Macon like 2 months ago doing a dinner, and then I'll be back in May.
That's a shout out.
Yeah, and I'm sorry if they're getting mentioned on The Simpsons, Sex and the City, in songs. They've got something going on.
Participation
trophy.
Yeah.
I don't don't know that Savannah ever got mentioned in Sex and the City.
Throw down. So Amy's throwing shade.
Throwing shade.
Well, let's move on.
I love Savannah, by the way. I'm not throwing shade on the city.
Which direction is that shade?
I'm gonna call that shade. Anyway.
I'm just saying.
Well, like, ma'am,
put it in perspective.
If you are a woman of a certain age in Macon or pretty much anywhere else in the South, you have likely been called the M word. And I'm talking about ma'am.
Are you just going to stand there all day?
No, ma'am. I mean, yes, ma'am. I mean, I'm
just... Well, which is it, yes or no?
No, ma'am.
Good. Then move.
Yes, ma'am.
So this week, the Savannah Morning News published an article about the real meaning behind the word ma'am. Linguist Kirk Hazen says the word goes back to landowners and feudal systems and those who worked the land in England and France. In more contemporary settings, he says phrases like ma'am and sir can feel unfamiliar and uncomfortable to people. So what about us? Amy, you and I are the only women at the table. What do you think when you get called ma'am?
Well, it gives me pause because I think I feel like I'm way younger than I really am linearly. So when I go, oh, I am not the youngest person in the room anymore. Or so it makes me think. And then I'm like, okay, so that's great that, you know, they have that kind of generosity.
You're hedging your bets here, yeah.
Generosity, because at some point I'm going to be glad someone is doing that.
Calling you ma'am?
Yeah, and I was raised in Fort Worth, Texas, and so... My mom made sure we said no, sir, yes, ma'am. And but there, you did that to people you didn't know very well. Like, if you knew them.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
then
if you knew them,
it
was Miss somebody or, you know, something like that. But.
Matthew, what do you think about being called sir?
I like it. Respect me. I'm 48. I'm grown. I think that in the last 20 years we've become super informal. Like driving up, I was, you know, just having this conversation, and I was saying how now I'll meet someone that could be my father.
Uh-huh.
And when I meet them, instead of them saying, I'll say, oh, yes, sir. And they're like, oh, sir is my father. And I'm thinking, okay, if you're my father's age, your father has to be at least 90 to 100.
Right.
And so you want me to call you Paul. Okay, if you want me to call you Paul, that's cool. But at no point in time can you come back and ask me to respect you on that one, because I just called you Paul. We're super cool, right? We're cool. We're friends. We're buds. Like, I grew up thinking that when you call somebody by their first name, you're no longer an acquaintance.
Right.
Right? You're no longer acquaintance. And now people have become super informal and then try to pull it back later when they need to. You can't do that. Once you start putting out that you're Paul, that you're just Paul.
Clinton, I think you're the youngest person at the table. Do you get called sir?
Sometimes I get called sir. I don't usually like being called sir, and I don't call people sir either. Actually, just like one of the people who was in the article, Sarah Axemaker, I too am from Alaska, and Alaska is a very small state within a very small city that I grew up in. And we just simply didn't have any sort of hierarchy at all in Homer, Alaska. I think coming down to the South, and even just in a bigger city, you do have sort of like power structures of like there's leaders and there's community leaders. And it's difficult for me to try to put in how I was raised into these Southern systems. And so I simply just don't say sir or ma'am, unless I'm being very, I mean, sometimes I will, but usually I don't. It's more theatrical.
You must get called sir. He's a business owner and he has employees, and I always assume that employees at least are going to call you sir. Is that not accurate?
Nice save, Celeste.
No. Yes, right.
I think Clinton really hit it on the head. You know, he was empathetic as to why, you know, people do that. I think that's the deal. It shouldn't always be about me, me, me.
Right.
You know, you should, if you're offended, then you need to just slow your roll for a second and see why that person did it. It's not because you're old, you're ugly, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's because maybe that person was trained that way, and their parents or their mother, their father, whatever, would absolutely beat them with a switch if they didn't say that when they were younger.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a Southern thing either. Because, I mean, when I went to go see my grandparents in Connecticut, everybody said, yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Mr., Mrs. You know, it was.
I grew up in L.A. There wasn't a whole lot of yes,
sir. Anyone that says, like, yes, sir, or no, sir, would definitely not do it to offend you.
Right, yeah. I don't think it's even done here in the South to offend. I think it's just a term of endearment and respect.
Well, this is obviously...
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir.
I like you, Brunswick.
Thank you. I'm getting ready to go buy some furniture right now.
And I think that's the last time those two are going to agree on anything. It is Friday. We're in the break room. You can join the conversation on Twitter at OST Talk. Just ahead, have you finished your taxes yet? Because they can be a killer.
Death and taxes?
Yes. You're not familiar with the phrase, in this world nothing is certain but death and taxes?
Well, I am now.
Glad I could be of some help.
We are live from Savannah Coffee Roasters in downtown Savannah with Kristen King on harp and Jackson Evans on guitar. This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. This is On Second Thought. We are live from Savannah Coffee Roasters, and it is Savannah Music Festival weekend. The music you hear today, the beautiful music, is coming from the talented fingers of Kristen King and Jackson Evans. Our thanks to them on harp and guitar. Let's give them a round of applause. Beautiful music, right? Before we get back into the break room, we have an update on the story we brought you yesterday from Savannah. It's about the 11-acre development on Savannah's Victory Drive. Some residents say that would drastically change their neighborhood. Nick Palumbo is founder of the watchdog advocacy group Preserve Savannah. He told us that his group has succeeded in lobbying the Zoning Board of Appeals, and they will deny requests to build a 5-story public storage facility in that area. You can get more details about that at gpbnews.org. But let's get back to the break room. Today's panel is organic farmer Matthew Rayford, Savannah business owner Rule Joyner, Savannah Magazine associate editor Amy Condon, and our newcomer is Clinton Edminster, executive director of Art Rise Savannah. Welcome back, everybody.
Thank you.
Very special thank you to not only the sponsor of the break room every week, they're the people who donate our coffee, but they're also the owners of the lovely space that we're using today and this week with our live audience. So a huge thank you to Savannah Coffee Roasters. They're online at savannah.coffee.com, and much appreciation. But let's get into what is probably the hottest topic in Georgia right now. I think that's fair. The Religious Liberty Bill that's now... awaiting its fate in the governor's office. This bill, if it's signed, would allow faith-based groups to refuse service to same-sex couples under the law, or actually any ones that they said violated their religious principles. Brian Tolleson runs the Atlanta-based entertainment company Bark Bark. When we spoke to him in February, he offered this dire prediction about Georgia's film industry should this bill become law.
We're in the business of culture. That's what entertainment is. And if Georgia isn't participating in the larger culture of our country, and we're sort of stepping back to the days of segregation, nobody's going to stand for that.
Well, he turned out to be very accurate. Major film companies like Disney, Marvel, and AMC have threatened to boycott productions in Georgia if the bill become law. That includes, of course, AMC's widely popular series, The Walking Dead. On top of potentially losing some famous bloodthirsty zombies, the NFL says Atlanta might lose out on hosting the Super Bowl should the Religious Liberty Bill become law. So it's all up to Governor Deal. We've got four smart people here. What do we think is going to happen? Rule, you caught my eye first.
You know, I think I'll go deep in on this one. You know, we got to stand with our gay family, friends, and neighbors, and you know, it's the right call for I predict the Governor Deal will absolutely veto this.
You think he'll veto it?
You know, I think the larger narrative that we really need to look at is the cowards that amended this bill at midnight, waiting for people to leave, doing the dirty work. You know, when the people aren't watching, we see you now. And in fact, we're talking about you on Georgia Public Broadcasting. Shame on you.
Okay.
Ooh, gauntlet.
Anything else to be said on that? You know, why is the governor waiting then? Since it's such bad press, if he plans to veto it, why would he allow this to remain a story for so long instead of
because
just...
Because he can. He's the governor.
Yeah.
It's a poker face, right? You know, like if I can hold my cards long enough, maybe the other team will do what it need, would do the work for me, you know?
But don't you also feel like this is just allowing us to stay in the headlines in a negative way?
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes bad publicity is good... For
you got to have a build-up for a Disney
movie,
right?
There you go. You have a build-up for it.
Yeah. Becomes a bigger story.
And then it becomes a bigger story when he turns it.
Seabiscuit, wait and see.
Right. Yeah. Seabiscuit, I like that.
It becomes a bigger story when he goes sort of against his party to some extent.
Okay.
And, I mean, he's even considering, you know, he has the other bills to consider that will put him at odds with the party, too, like the Campus Carry
bill, which is also getting a lot of negative feedback.
I'm a little fascinated that sort of, a group that sort of, you know, portrays itself as pro-business isn't looking at this from, like, a commerce...
Are you talking about the Republican Party?
Yes.
Okay.
In a sense, that, you know...
Now, to be fair, a number of high-level Republicans and the Chamber of Commerce and everyone has come forward and said this is bad business. And we certainly love to hear all opinions on this show, so...
Exactly. I'm just curious why... you know, a state that really needs business, a state that has a high poverty rate, especially in Atlanta and Savannah and places that really benefit from production companies coming here, and not just production companies, large creative commerce.
A few elected representatives, though, do not speak for business.
You're right.
Yeah.
So does everyone agree? Clinton, Matthew, you guys, everyone here thinks the governor will veto it?
I would hope so.
I can't
even begin to think of... the retribution that would happen if he didn't.
And also, you know, I think we also have to think, and we were just talking off the mic a second ago, is that this becomes a slippery slope. You know, like once you start doing these little things right here and allowing a bill to kind of like seep in to do your dirty work, you start figuring out other ways to add other little things in. And I think that this is a very
you're all about
slippery
conspiracy
slope.
Theories. We have the story for you coming up.
No, I'm just saying.
I was kind of curious in the sense of this bill. If there is somebody, you know, a minister perhaps, who is fine with ministering to, is very inclusive.
Michael Cheney here in Savannah.
Well, anyone. There's several here in Savannah. But what kind of position does that put them in? As protected, even if they're church or...
I don't think it affects them. It just gives them a right to not serve.
Okay.
In any case, I know there's a lot of people who have opinions on this out there. Feel free to share them with us. You know, we love to hear all sides. But let's talk about something which is basically universally reviled, and that's the IRS. We have a couple more weeks until tax day. That's a warning if you are procrastinating right now, putting your taxes on your to-do list if you have not filed yet.
Will you look at those morons? I paid my taxes over a year ago.
Dad, that was last year's taxes. You have to pay again this year.
Okay, Marge, if anyone asks, you require 24-hour nursing care. Lisa's a clergyman, Maggie has seven people, and Bart was wounded in Vietnam.
Cool.
So to make things a little easier, the Internal Revenue Service has offered a $10,000 prize to the person who submits the best idea on how to make tax filing easier. And I want to know if anyone has some really great ideas, because you could earn $10,000.
First off, I just have to say $10,000 is nothing to the IRS. And to me, them even letting us know that they have 10 grand to just drop on anybody with a good idea means that they're probably not going to do anything with it. Because this should be like a half a million, $4 million, a $30 billion prize, you know.
Right.
You should make a lot of money from this if you come up with the best idea.
Do you have a good idea?
Of course I don't. I'm in the arts. I have no idea. But I want more than 10 grand if I like revolutionize American commerce.
What I was confused is like, an easier way of filing your taxes or just having a flat tax across the board would make everyone's life easier.
Well, a flat tax is a completely different thing. They're just talking about filing.
But
yeah, because people have complained.
To file.
How to make it easier to file? Like, would it be
There's
possible?
There's no way to make it easier to file because everybody is at a different socioeconomic standpoint.
Well, I'll tell you. You know, here's my idea. You know how you use TurboTax, but they charge you $100 to file.
Oh, okay. What
how
you
about
mean is...
the IRS allow us to use as easy and sophisticated a software and make it free? Why do I have to pay $100 to file my taxes?
So they should direct deposit to you right now.
I owe money, but okay.
I also know that like Intuit and QuickBooks, and I think they're kind of the same thing, but
they lobby
to specifically make this a very difficult process
that
we do have to purchase for $100.
Right.
And if 300 million
more.
People are purchasing $100
business.
Or you need somebody to go to.
So that's
rule,
that's,
you,
that's
have
my
you filed
idea.
Your taxes yet?
No, I filed an extension.
Oh, okay.
So, but I mean, you know, taxes are even more than about a revenue. It's also about influencing people's behavior and what they do with their money.
Mm-hmm.
So you sort of have to get even more 30,000 feet than how is it easy? I mean, it's a larger tool than just revenue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We are hanging out in the break room. We're live in Savannah with organic farmer Matthew Rayford, Savannah business owner Rule Joyner, Savannah magazine editor Amy Condon, and Clinton Edminister of Art Rise Savannah. All right, let's move on to a slightly more serious subject. A young gay couple in the Atlanta area is still recovering from severe burns. They were doused with boiling hot water last month. Marquez Tolbert and Anthony Gooden were sleeping when Gooden's mother's boyfriend poured the boiling water on them. He was unhappy over their relationship. Tolbert spoke to WSB-TV.
The pain doesn't let you sleep. It's like it's excruciating 24 hours a day. And it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't dial down or anything. It's there.
The alleged attacker was sent to the Fulton County Jail, charged with two counts of aggravated battery. But the question that a lot of people are asking is, do we then classify this as a hate crime? And is there a purpose, when you classify something as a hate crime, for it to have a stronger punishment?
Yes, I absolutely think so. I was reviewing this whole incident earlier this morning, and this is what I would believe to be a hate crime. If we have that word, we should use it, and we should use it in times like these. This is definitely above and beyond an aggravated assault. This was definitely against somebody's lifestyle, and that to me carries lots of hate. And I would rather not live in a society
and
that
he said it.
Lets that.
He actually said in his response to the
police, attacker,
the alleged attacker actually said, you know, I ain't want them to sleep together anymore. And that's what I want to do.
Like, so now should that carry a heavier penalty than someone who throws boiling hot water on somebody, then it's not a hate crime?
Well,
Rule?
I think this lady like should get a heavier sentence just because she's stupid. I mean, there's the guy. I mean, there's a Darwin Award to this. I mean, you know, anybody that just even comes out and says that, double her penalty. She needs help. She needs to learn.
And I think the mother in this one too is you know, it's I can't see how the mother didn't realize that the boyfriend was homophobic. I don't see that, right? Because I know, like, with my daughter being a lesbian, if anybody,
yes,
if I even remotely thought that something was going to go awry, I would be the first. That person wouldn't even have a chance. Never. He would have got hot water thrown on him. But it wouldn't have been the other way. I mean, really, you're going to allow your child to be susceptible to something
possible
bad
violence.
To have possible violence. And she even said, well, I knew when he came out that
it would be something
would be harmful. Well, how did you know that? Had you talked to somebody that said that this was going to be harmful?
It's like it was almost like throwing hot water.
Right. She threw the hot
in
water
a situation.
Too, in that situation.
Okay, so let's turn to possible victims that may shouldn't have been victims. It's time to talk about the presidential election. Most people agree, right, that children should be off limits in political rhetoric. We all pretty much agree on that, right?
Yep.
Yeah. But what about spouses? Republican Party frontrunner Donald Trump made a threat against his challenger, Ted Cruz. He said, quote, "Be careful or I will spill the beans on your wife." Ted Cruz had this response.
"I don't get angry often. But you mess with my wife, you mess with my kids, that'll do it every time. Donald, you're a sniveling coward, and leave Heidi the hell alone."
Jinkies.
Right.
Yeah. Is that going to be a new phrase, leave Heidi the hell alone?
I was more attracted by sniveling coward.
Yes. Heidi 2016.
It almost feels like they're going to pull out their swords, you know, and go at a duel, right? But here's the question. Should family members... And this is a serious question, because look, a first lady does make a difference when someone becomes president.
I think Ted Cruz actually bit. You know, you have to understand who you're arguing with. If you're going to be presidential, you need to just rise above it and let the people see, you know, what's going on. He played into it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of empty threat. There's like, "I'll come after you," in the rhetoric.
Yeah.
These days. So, like, just don't engage that.
Yeah.
Just don't.
Because if somebody says something against your wife, I know in reality.
If I'm running for president,
right,
I want to talk about the people.
Right.
I want to talk about the issues. If you want to talk about my wife, that's fine. And you can do it after I'm president as well. But I'm going to keep working for the people.
So, I got you. Are you running for president?
I was just about to say, are you laying the groundwork for a presidential run?
It's early. Maybe we'll have to have a conversation about it.
Maybe you can be his running mate.
I probably
done.
Could.
I'm voting.
Yeah. There we go.
They're fist bumping.
Great.
There you go. Wonder Twin Power.
For the first time in a while.
Wait, because of Ted Cruz?
No.
Because of these two.
Of Rule and Matthew.
Right.
Oh, she's getting teared up. She's getting all verklempt.
No. But I mean, I think you're right. You know, he did bite. However, just being a man with a wife, you would have some sort of rearing up.
That's when I call Donald Trump personally on the phone. I say, "Hey, get Donald on the phone." I say, "Listen, when this is over, I'm going to come beat the brakes off you."
Right, beat the brakes off. That's what.
But I'm not going to do it on
only
camera.
In the break
I will
room.
Find you.
Only in the break room.
Well, is that a Southern thing?
That's a Southern
beat the brakes.
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome to Savannah.
Yes, ma'am. It is.
The interesting thing is that this is a pressure cooker that sort of speaks to your temperament.
Yeah.
To what you're going to confront on a much larger scale as a leader. And boy, just the sort of tit for tat and the Twitter fights that are going on and things like that, you're going, whoa, you're going to be dealing with...
You know, we have had presidents and ex-presidents and future presidents who have dueled and fought it out and killed people.
And look where
duels.
We are.
Yeah. Well, all right.
Ooh.
All right.
Have we not evolved?
Is that a serious question?
No,
instead of guns, we're using Twitter.
Exactly.
We're out of time in the break room. On that note, I want to say thank you to my guests. That is Savannah Magazine Associate Editor Amy Condon. We also had organic farmer Matthew Rayford, Savannah business owner Rule Joyner.
We love you, Macon.
And Clinton Edminster, Executive Director of Art Rise Savannah. Thank you, you guys.
Thank you.
We had a good time.
Thanks again so much to Savannah Coffee Roasters and to musicians Kristen King and Jackson Evans. Kristen and her harp will be at the Cinema Vino at the Tybee Post Theater. That's April 9th. And you can catch Jackson at the Jazz Corner in Hilton Head every Monday, and at Cotton and Rana Tuesdays. They're going to play us out right after I say this. For today, that is On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Celeste.